Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 4, Season 8. We're doing it in a slightly different way today. Jack Bennion will be joining us a little bit later on in the podcast, but we thought it'd be best to get a man who is, unfortunately or fortunately, I'm still conflicted on this one, but Dan Barrett, of course, co-driver to Elvin Evans, is just flown back from Rally Argentina. We thought we'd get him on at the top of the show. So, Dan, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're okay. Me and Ryan are here. And before we started this, Dan, we both had the same feeling of, do we commiserate? Do we congratulate? Where do we go with this one, mate?
I'm a bit unsure myself, to be honest. I still haven't kind of fully got my head around the situation yet, even in 2 or 3 days later. So we'll take the congratulations for second. I think that's the best way to look at it on a positive note.
I think you'd be mad not to, first and foremost. Where to you, you've sat alongside Elvin off and on for a good number of years. Where to you did you feel like, okay, this is, we've moved on a bit here? Has it felt all of a sudden, or has it gradually been coming for you?
No, to be honest, I think that, you know, in the last 12 months, I think he's moved on for sure. Last year, I think he moved on, and, you know, his determination to get back to, you know, to do a full season was evident last year. And, you know, obviously he's got that chance again this year, but we've, you know, up to now, we've not really had the full practice to be able to kind of fight where we wanted to fight. And, you know, on each rally, we've shown glimpses of speed, but certain things have, you know, hindered us along the way, and we've not been able to, like, put it together for a full rally. But, you know, this was the first time that, you know, the car worked well, the tyres worked well, and we kind of just thought that at the beginning of the year that when things are going well, we've to try and capitalise on that, and, you know, push as hard as we can to try and get the results over a full weekend.
Well, like you said, everything came together, and the speed was fantastic. And going back to your point a little bit earlier on, I mean, I guess if somebody had said to you before you went to Argentina, would you be happy with second place? that would have definitely been a yes.
So definitely.
So it must be a real confidence boost, I guess. Once both of you have put it to one side, it's got to be a confidence boost for the rest of the year, particularly going into Portugal next.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've always thought between ourselves that, you know, we can fight at the sharp end of the leaderboard, but, you know, we've not had the chance really to show that we can do it for 3 days. So we've obviously shown that now, that when everything's right, we can fight with the best guys. And, you know, I think that's probably moved us both onto, like, another level. And, you know, we'll take confidence from that we know we can do it. So if we're in that situation again, then, you know, we'll be able to take the fight to the guys, and hopefully next time come out on top.
Now, you obviously built a fantastic lead to begin with. You had a great opening day, but then you had sort of various problems that pegged you back, didn't you, from day to one, really?
Yeah, we had a clean stage on the first stage of Saturday morning, which I think from memory we were fastest on again, and we thought, okay, this is good. You know, we'll just kind of keep doing what we're doing stage by stage and not really think about the actual, you know, the result at that point. But then things did start to just go a little bit wrong, and when you're fighting right at the sharp end, even the smallest things can make quite a big difference. So you really need a clean stage every single stage, and you need to be perfect with everything. And, you know, small things kept happening, nothing major, but just small things, few punches, little spin, you know, things like that. And, you know, it kind of maybe was, you know, our downfall really in the end. We lost a few too many 5 second batches really that kind of ended up being too close on the last day.
Yeah, I mean, nonetheless, to miss out by less than a second, I mean, you could see it on your faces at the end of the last stage. That still came as a bit of a shock, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we hadn't had a clean run on the two previous stages on the Sunday, but, you know, the times were still pretty good. And even though it had got down to 0.6 of a second going into the last stage, we kind of thought, you know, we'll just give it everything in here and, you know, try and still be sensible and stay on the line and not, you know, not damage the car, because it was notoriously rough. And to be honest, from my side, as soon as we set off in the stage, the last stage, I thought, probably halfway down the mountain, I thought, yeah, this is pretty good. You know, I can't see Thierry really going much faster than this at all, because I don't think, you know, there wasn't really the space on the road to do it. So I kind of felt confident even going halfway down the stage. I thought, I think we've probably got this. And then obviously to make an ever so small mistake, you know, near the finish, and, you know, maybe cost us. But, you know, I don't think it was that particular instance with the bridge that cost us. It was just accumulation of things over the weekend.
But nonetheless, fantastic result at the end of it, and I guess a bit of a change around in the team for you to be team leaders when you've got a multiple world champion in the team as your teammate.
Yeah, for sure. You know, yeah, and we definitely, you know, look, reflecting back now, you know, second for sure before the rally we would have taken, and you know, we would have been more than happy with that. But yeah, to be like the best of the Fords was, you know, with a couple of private Fords there as well, you know, there were five world car Fords there, and to be, you know, consistently the fastest one on majority of the stages, you know, with the calibre of drivers that they've got in the team, you know, it's really good for the confidence for the future. And, you know, we hope we don't have to wait too long to be in a situation like that again.
Now, obviously, with the Acropolis gone from WRC and Safari long gone now, you know, Argentina is one of the rougher events. Modern World Rally cars, particularly 2017 cars, fantastic suspension on them. But, you know, how physical do you find it from the co-driver's seat? Because you can't always see what's coming up, can you?
No, it's pretty tough, to be honest. You know, obviously, a rally like Argentina, I think over the years, they've not really done an awful lot of maintenance to the roads, if any. So the stages year on year over there are definitely getting rougher every year. So the cars can obviously take it, but then the weak link generally becomes like the bodies of the people sat in it. So it is pretty tough, but, you know, we kind of try and do our best to be in decent enough shape. And, you know, it's just something you've just got to put up with, really. But it's not the end of the world.
Now, another gravel rally coming up. You just talked about it off air before we came on, that you're already starting to work for Portugal. DMAC obviously working very, very hard behind the scenes. You know, that must be encouraging as well, the development that's coming on the tyre side.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we've made big steps forward with the gravel tyre, especially, you know, it was evident for somewhere like Argentina. So I don't think the conditions in Portugal will be too dissimilar. The surface is probably not too dissimilar to what we've got in Argentina. So, you know, we'd hope that we're going to be in a position where the whole package is competitive again. And, you know, our road position on the first day will still be not the best, but it'll be quite good. So hopefully if everything works, we can get a good first day and, you know, hopefully be in a position to challenge high up by the time the second day comes around.
Dan, do the guys at DMAC and obviously the guys at M-Sport, is there an expectation level now? Do you think it's gone up, or do you think, you know, you're expected to maintain where you are? You know, has the bar being raised, I guess, is the question.
No, I don't think so, really, because I think everybody working on the project from M-Sport and from DMAC, you know, be realistic with where the whole situation is. You know, we obviously know we've worked to do on certain surfaces and certain types of conditions with a tyre, you know, and everybody's aware of that, and they're pushing to keep making the improvements. So then I don't think there's an expectation that every single rally we're going to go there and be challenging at the front, because, you know, I don't think that's just realistic just at this time, to be honest.
Now, I think you kind of answered this question, but, you know, you went away and kind of did something else for a year, and Elvin went back to the British Rally Championship. Do you think that was a blessing in disguise now in hindsight?
I think it's probably given us both the hunger to come back and, you know, to get an opportunity the second time round in a competitive car. It's probably given us more hunger, I think, to maybe do a better job of it this time and try and not let the chance pass by and, you know, get the results and try and be ultimately stay there for, you know, years to come, really, and, you know, keep getting the drives for the future. So, yeah, I think it was probably, even though it was hard at the time, I think maybe it was a good thing in a funny kind of way.
Now, if I can just ask you one last thing with regards to the WRC, obviously it's great to see you back there as well. And, you know, we've got Scott Marshall, who's going to be obviously joining the fray in the not too distant future. Is it something a bit special about the, and I've asked you this question numerous times, but I always find it fascinating that the fact that you guys are so much in demand, you know, the British co-driver just does seem to be the way to go, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think to be honest, in like top line rallying, the British Quarter Hour had a bit of a quiet spell for a few years. There was quite a lot of foreign guys that were, you know, were speaking, you know, English and reading English pace notes and that for drivers. But I think recently, you know, the English speaking British core drivers have kind of got themselves back to the kind of the top seats again. And, you know, there's really four of us now, if you include Paul Nagel as well, you know, from in and around. And I think it's brilliant that we've all, you know, we're all really friendly and mates and everything like that. So it's brilliant to all be involved together and, you know, like sharing the same experiences for sure.
Fantastic. Well, we'll let you get. Okay. Can we ask what the preparation is that you're doing for Portugal at the moment? Is it fair to ask that question?
I'm just doing a recce plan for the recce.
See, folks, so. If you want to know what the difference is between average, good, and professional, it's called still suffering with jet lag and doing the recce schedule for the next rally. I think that's fair. Fair play to you, Dan. Well, listen, we're going to let you get back to it. Really, really, really do appreciate your time, and thank you so much for joining us. And please pass our best on to Elvin as well. It'd be good to catch up with him as well soon.
Yeah, I will do. No problem. Thank you very much.
This is Absolute Rally. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangerondi Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangerondi Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Big thanks to Dan Barrett for joining us in the opening section. Obviously, Jack joins us later in the podcast. And a bigger thank you also for Dan for not pointing out the fact that I managed to combine two British co-drivers in one name.
Yeah, Scott Marshall, that was quite impressive. You know, not to be confused with Seb Martin.
I know. Do you know what? I got completely and utterly. I was going to mention the two of them, and then I just kind of merged.
No, just
them.
Do it in one.
I know. I just merged the pair of them together. So, apologies to Seb Marshall and to Scott Martin, but I was trying to think of the two of you at the same time, and that's what happens when you try and think of two English co-drivers at the same time. Anyway, moving on. It's just you and me this week. I think we know where we're going to go with this one, right? Rally Argentina. We've just had the man who went through the emotional turmoil of leading event and losing it, as you say, by 0.7 of a second. I don't know where to go. I don't know where to start Rally Argentina, because it was a funny old event in the way that we were expecting so much more from the likes of Chris Meek. You know, you and I both predicted, as did Jack, as did Bex Williams the week before, that Chris was going to be the man to beat. And things are all not well. It seems that we might have jumped the gun, really, on predicting the Citroen, which perhaps ironed out all its gremlins.
Yeah, we kind of got our predictions wrong, didn't we?
That's an understatement. That's an understatement.
I think I took Thierry Neuville up there, so slightly in my defence. But yeah, God, we don't want to see weekends like that for Chris Meek, do we? It just couldn't have been any worse. I mean, I guess the only positive you can take is that when things were going well, he was probably the fastest Michelin runner. You know, I don't know if he'd been quite on Elvin's pace early on. Elvin was already pulling away, but you know, Chris was going well, and then he obviously hit that bump, didn't turn in, and rolled down the road. Still does seem to be a few gremlins there at the Citroen. You know, definitely the suspension on the big bumps, it just wasn't dealing with it. You know, it just didn't seem to have any rebound control, and it was just launching the car into the air. And obviously, it wasn't just Chris that suffered from that. It was Craig as well. So strange to be seeing sort of fundamental suspension issues there. And obviously that put Chris out of the running. And then, you know, the accident on day two was huge, wasn't it? It's not one that you want to see, that. It clipped a rock, and I guess it maybe broke the steering or something. The car suddenly turned left and, well, barrel rolled over 10 times, didn't it? Pretty nasty one, that.
Well, Chris described it as the worst accident as his career. And, you know,
and he's had one too.
I was just, you know what, you beat me to it. I was just about to say, he's not afraid to show the underside of a car to spectators, is he? I think that's fair to say. But yeah, you know, I think obviously Craig also had issues on the first day. He hit the initial first accident that Chris had. He hit the same rock and lost all his, I think it was, all compression, didn't he? All hydraulic pressure rather. And, again, we haven't spoke about probably this too much, but right, this is something you know probably a lot more than me about, but we seem to be getting more issues now with hydraulic pressures to diffs and things, aren't we, with these diffs coming back in?
Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, if you have a hydraulic issue now, then you're losing your centre diff. So it and now the centre diffs are active; they're computer controlled; they're constantly varying, effectively the centre diff pressure. So if you lose the hydraulics, then you get a car that's more difficult to drive. But obviously, you lose the gear shift, which we're back to now as well, because we're on paddle shift, moving on from the stick shift that we had initially with the 1600 WRC cars. We are seeing a lot of hydraulic problems, whether that's just related to the fact that these cars are new, they're a development of the previous generation cars, but a lot of new technology, more power, more performance, and yeah, we're seeing all the teams suffering hydraulic problems to a larger or a lesser degree, and certainly these cars aren't bomb proof, which we're quite used to seeing in the WRC over recent times.
Folks, we always take it as read that obviously you know how these rallies have panned out, so we never like to try and, I suppose, insult you too much by assuming that you've not looked at the results. If you're downloading our podcast, there's a fair reason that you'll be fully up to speed with what's going on in WRC. But I do want to look at the kind of where the runners and riders are, and I suppose if we kind of go team by team to some degree, we look at Hyundai, obviously Thierry, you know, Pippin, Elvin, and unfortunately Dan right at the, I say unfortunately because we're slightly biased by the fact that obviously we are in Britain when we make this podcast, and I've known Dan and Elvin for a long time, as has Ryan, so I suppose we feel a bit more emotion towards those guys. But Thierry obviously getting his second win of the year, the first manufacturer to claim two wins, which was a question I put to Bex a couple of weeks ago when Bex Williams was on the programme. But just looking at the rest of the Hyundai runners, right, a very innocuous slow roll for Hayden. He just doesn't seem to be himself, does he, at the moment?
No, it was an unfortunate roll on the first day, and it teetered on the edge, didn't it? It looked like it might stay upright, and then it just fell over, and that was just at the start of his troubles over the weekend. We really hoped that when WRC got back onto gravel, we'd see Hayden Padden fighting at the front, and that's what we want to see. You know, that's what we saw last year when he took a fantastic victory in Argentina, and his interview at the end of Argentina this year summed it up. He just feels a million miles from where he was last year. He can't make the car work for him. He's having lots of issues. He had power steering issues, and unfortunately, he's in a difficult place at the minute.
Do you think if I can ask this, and you know, I mentioned obviously with Seb joining him, in a couple of events time, is this going to be a tough time for Seb to be joining them, or do you think this could, you know, kind of almost give him a little bit of refocus, you know, a change of co-driver, especially, you know, John Callout's been with him for a long, long time. It's going to be possibly a bigger change than what most people maybe who've not been in a rally car, certainly at a certain level, would appreciate.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lack of focus with Hayden. You know, I think he's a very driven individual. He's very motivated. You know, John does a very professional job in the passenger seat. It will be a change, obviously, in the car. It'll be a little bit of a refresh, if you like. But I think Hayden just could do with a little bit of old-fashioned look on his side, couldn't he? Just to get the rub of the green and get things flowing. But he doesn't seem to have got this car working for him the way he wants. We've heard Danny Sordo saying that. We heard Sebastian Ogier saying that at the weekend with the Ford. So, you know, maybe these modern generation of WRC cars have quite a relatively small window where they're easy to drive or comfortable to drive for their particular driver, because we're hearing a lot of complaints about setup this year. So Auger definitely, will come on to in a minute, definitely hasn't got it, but the other two Hyundai drivers seem to be struggling, and yet Thierry Neuville is flying. You know, he should have won the first two rounds, he didn't, he's won the last two, and you'd really say he's the man to beat.
Do you think it's fair to say, you know, we've almost, I suppose we're next generation on now, maybe Seb's not quite the same, and maybe Yari kind of also falls into this category, in fact certainly he does. We're back in the realms of obviously the active centre diff, which a lot of the drivers may not have certainly been at the highest level to being, you know, in a situation where they've got to manage and get it working for them. Do you think there's a lot to be said for the change of going in that direction?
I mean, you're relying a lot on your team for developing obviously the centre diff and getting the car to work, and it's a huge variable in terms of the setup. You're not just dealing with the suspension geometry, springs and dampers. You know, the centre diff now makes a massive difference to how the car handles, and that then in turn has to work with the your suspension settings. So there's a lot more variables, and I think that's maybe what we're seeing. Because there's more variables, it's more difficult to get the drivers comfortable. And I think it's part driver and part team. But there's certainly a few drivers out there that just haven't quite got a handle on it yet.
We've just mentioned Yari Matti. Toyota's weekend was do we call it uneventful? Just weren't really at the races, and still very much going through this learning process, I guess, event by event.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a solid, if not spectacular, weekend for Yari Matti. I mean, you know, he was less than 2 minutes away at the end of the rally, finished fifth, having suffered overheating problems and lost some time from that. So, you know, I guess the performance of the car wasn't too far away, and they're gaining more mileage all the way through. I mean, obviously, I won't say it was a false dawn, but winning in Sweden obviously raised expectations. But, you know, let's not forget they've done an awful lot of winter testing from their base in Finland, and Finland's obviously very different to Argentina. So there was always going to be it was always going to take time to get the team established, to really get a handle on the car in all conditions. And I think we're just seeing that. But a solid, if not spectacular, result. But, the car wasn't too far away.
I suppose, looking at it now, we're gonna go Andreas just one last time. I know we keep saying this. Bearing in mind now where we're at, I think it's accepted that Andreas will be in Portugal in a WRC2 car again with Skoda Motorsport. But if you were playing fantasy WRC boss and you could wave a magic wand and put him in one of your cars, which team boss would you be?
Well, I think. I think we talked about this, didn't we, already? And
has anything changed? I think that's probably what I'm... No, okay.
No, I don't think it has. I mean, I guess the only slightly surprising thing is we're now hearing Hyundai backpedal again and say, no, it was just a test and there's nothing more to it than that. So I guess from that point of view, maybe we were all a bit presumptuous with the Hyundai test. But if it was purely a test, then surely... that makes it even more, it makes Andreas Mikkelsen even more attractive to somebody like Toyota, doesn't it? If you can now bring Volkswagen information and latest Hyundai information. So, I would say that makes him even more desirable to the other teams if Hyundai aren't seriously negotiating with him, but I still have a feeling that they will be behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Now, we spoke to Dan Barrett at the top of the programme about, you know, the weekend that him and Elvin had, of course. Now, kind of looking a little bit further back, it seems a bit odd, doesn't it? I think you made reference to it to Dan. You know, you've got a four times world champion behind you, and you've got Oit Tanak behind you. Oit's weekend, again, dare I say, uneventful.
Yeah, he struggled a little bit early on, didn't he?
It seems odd to say that to somebody who's finished in third place, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, and again, he wasn't, you know, he was less than half a minute away from the win as well, and he struggled a little bit early on, but then after that, he was quite strong. So I think he had a bit of a change of setup, and then once they got the car working, then he was right on the pace. But his teammate just never looked at home all weekend. Sebastian Ogier to be nearly a minute and a half off the pace, never looked happy, never looked to be fighting right at the front. And, you know, and again, we're hearing Ogier talking about can't get the setup, can't get it comfortable. And it does seem to be in those finer details of the setup. You know, the car's fundamentally working. I mean, Elvin's proven by setting fastest times that the car's working. So, Ogier's not a particularly happy camper at the minute, is he? And I guess that's it goes back to what we were talking about recently, in that the previous teams he's been with Volkswagen and Citroen, you know, he has a lot of time in those cars, and his car was developed around him, and he felt very much at home with it. Whereas, you know, he's jumped into the Fiesta last minute. It started very well, but as he's going to some of the tougher rallies, then it's taking longer than he would have anticipated, I think, to get him comfortable in it and to get it working. And he doesn't like being on the back foot, does he?
No, but even so, I still can't help but feel, and I think we said this after Mexico, I'm sure both parties would have chose where they are respectively in the championships, both drivers and manufacturers at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you know, Sebastian Ogier has got a good lead in the World Championship. M Sport have got a good lead in the Manufacturers Championship. So yeah, of course, if you'd said that, you know, like whatever 4 months ago, I'm sure both teams would have jumped to that. But Ogier's used to having things work nicely for him, just getting in the car and having to drive it, and that certainly isn't the case this year. So it's you know, we're having to see the reigning world champion fight, and I guess that's good. You know, everybody wanted to see him go into a new team and still have to prove himself, and I guess that's what he's going through at the minute. And we've talked about it. World championships aren't won normally by winning every rally, although I have to say Ogier's done a good job of doing that in previous years. But you know, world championships are about grafting through the difficult rallies. We talked about it in Corsica. He had a terrible weekend, came out with the podium. He's not had a great weekend in Argentina. He came out with fourth. His main championship rival was fifth in Latvala. But obviously, Thierry Neuville is coming, and coming very fast now. He should have been leading the championship. He's not. But Ogier is going to have to be on his game now going forwards, because Neuville is, you know, he's looking very, very fast everywhere he goes.
Now, is it lazy to say, do you think he'll be looking forward more to the tarmac rounds? Do we just assume the fact that he was French and everything else, that he's going to be quicker on tarmac than everybody else? Because let's be honest, Thierry's not sluggish either.
No, and you know, we're going to have to go back to Corsica, don't we? And the car wasn't working for him on, yes, okay, he had some technical problems as well, but the car wasn't working for him in terms of setup on the tarmac. So, you know, a lot of work to do for Ogier and M Sport to make him feel comfortable in the car, because like we've just said, the car's clearly working, the car's clearly got pace, but for whatever reason, Ogier is just not clicking with it at the minute.
Now, I suppose, moving forward, if you were to suspect a conversation that may be going on, what do you think Sebastian Ogier will be saying to Malcolm Wilson and his team? What do you think? Do you think it'll just be requesting more seat time? Do you think that's all it'll be, more testing?
Well, it's obviously, we're not really party to why he feels uncomfortable in the car, but he clearly just doesn't feel at home with it. And yeah, I mean, I guess the only way that's going to click is by spending more time in the car, more seat time, and trying things. You know, try and replicate the environment where he didn't feel comfortable, make some changes, and see how he can improve it. Like I said, it's unusual to see Sebastian Ogier, the multiple world champion, on the back foot, but he is. Having said that, the car's got pace, the team are very capable, it's just a case of them putting the two together. So I think it'll come. I think it's just the nature of the last-minute deal has put Ogier in a position he's not used to, but he's still getting the points, he's still getting the results. And, you know, I think, I'm sure, in fact, with his knowledge, his experience, and that of M Sports, that they'll get to the bottom of his handling issues pretty quickly.
Right, I suppose time ticks on for us both. I just wanted to touch upon a rally which we've tongue-in-cheek made reference to, of course, one that you've won. It was the second round of the MSA Penistone British Rally Championship at the weekend, right? Back to international status, none of this silliness with regards to bogey times and things like that. And as I say, we are going to talk to team boss Martin Wilkinson at the end of this podcast, Frederick Arling, but it didn't all start off his own way, and it was nice to see Tom Cave bring an R5 Hyundai out, talking about Hyundai, of course, which we've been talking about in WRC, but they seem to be putting more and more into this customer program. It was good to see Tom at least getting out on the first two stages and putting in two faster stage times.
Yeah, if you looked at the results for the Pirelli rally, you know, you'd see that Frederick Allen won comfortably. You know, he had a 40-second win, but actually that didn't reflect what happened over the weekend. I mean, like you said, Tom Kerr brought the new Hyundai i20 R5 into the British Championship for the first time, set two fastest times, and was looking not only at home in it, but very, very quick in it. But unfortunately, the suspension broke on the car, and he wasn't able to continue. But we are going to see him in Scotland, so that's great news for the championship. He's coming back with it. Austin Price, he's really, really getting to grips with his Fiesta R5, and he was snapping at Frederick's heels. He was only, I think, 4 seconds behind him with a couple of stages left when the handbrake release mechanism failed on his Fiesta, and he had to do a couple of three-point turns, and suddenly he's 40 seconds behind. And it was a shame for Austin, because he was looking like he was really going to take the fight to Frederick. But again, I'm sure going forwards, once we go to Scotland, that Austin will be fighting for the win there. So, you know, good battles right at the front of the BRC now.
Do you think, and again, obviously we know Elvin, of course, just hopping back to Elvin, of course, you know, was a British Rally Championship, a champion rather, last year. He came back to go forward, as I made reference to when I was talking to Dan. But, you know, Frederick Arlen was probably as near as probably contemporary throughout the year. Do you think it's fair to say what Elvin did at the weekend, it spurs people on like Frederick to say, well, you know, I was going toe to toe with you last year. Okay, you know, you dominated the championship, but there was certainly, I think Frederick took more stage wins than anybody else other than Elvin last year.
Yeah, of course, it's got to motivate the British Championship guys, because ultimately that's what they all want to achieve. They all want to get to WRC, and obviously with Austin and Tom, you know, they've been at junior levels in WRC. They've had a taste of it. Austin has got his prize drives in the R5 car to look forward to later on in the year, I think in Poland and Finland. So, you know, certainly for Austin, he will be really focused on those rallies to do the best job he can. But yeah, for all the guys in the British Championship to see what Elfin's done on his move back to WRC has got to be an inspiration for them.
Now, the other section, of course, which the guys at MN, of course, and Jack, which is why Jack was up there, very, 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 very involved in the junior section, which, you know, you and I have both been passionate about. I think you competed in the British Rally Championship in the junior section in a long, long, long time ago, didn't you?
Yeah, the British Junior Championship in 1995 and 96. Yes, I did. Yeah, just to remind me, I'm old. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, the weapon of choice, obviously, is the R2, the R2T, Fiesta and the Peugeot 208. And it's fair to say, the guys in the 208s now seem to be finding the legs of these cars. I think initially, I think they had that. And again, you can relate to this, right? You've been around, you know, French front wheel drive rally cars, and you're very much in your early career, but they were very much deemed to be more maybe tarmac cars and things like that, but they've definitely now seem to be getting them working on British Championship events.
Yeah, I guess inherently the French built cars, they work very well on tarmac, because obviously the French Championship, the main French Championship is a tarmac championship. So primarily, I guess their development comes first on tarmac before it then moves to gravel, and maybe some of their gravel rallies wouldn't be quite as rough and rocky as our gravel rallies. So it can take a little bit of time to get them to work in the British forests. I mean, I remember talking to Justin Dale on a few occasions about them trying to get 106 Maxis and 206 Maxis working in the UK, and it takes a little bit of time, and it's probably been the same for the 208 as well. So yeah, good to see a mix in R2, isn't it? Because to begin with we saw the Fiestas dominating the R5 category and the R2 category, but now we're seeing the Skoda and the Hyundai competitive in R5, and it's nice to see another manufacturer in the R2 category. We saw the Adam last year going very well, and now the 208.
We've just been talking about, obviously, you know, what Elvin and Dan went through. I don't think the timing was quite the same, but you have to feel for Callum Devine. You know, he led the rally for most of the events. And, you know, I seen some images of the tyres, you know, at the end down to canvas and things like that. Lost the rally right at the end to William Crichton, who in the tour he's been talking about. But yeah, that's an important lesson. You've got a funny feeling that he won't put himself back in that position again. About, you know, you've got to look after your tyres, haven't you? Especially in these front wheel drive screamers.
You do, yeah. Time management, very, very important, particularly on a rally like the Pirelli Rally. Kielder's very abrasive surface, and it can be very hard on tyres. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the Junior Championship is all about learning, and certainly I'm sure he'll take something from that. You know, William Crichton, good to see him win. Moved up from the Formula 1000 Junior Championships. I've started with the 1 litre cars, and good to see him going well in the British Junior Championship.
Absolutely. And congratulations also to Marion Evans as well, with one of my old co-drivers alongside Jonathan Jackson. So well done, boys. And Josh Cornwall in the cadet class, which was explained very, very succinctly last week by Ian Campbell. Obviously, we've got this cadet class now, and Josh Cornwall in the older spec R2 Fiesta as well, getting a result there. So, anyway, folks, we're not going to have any other business this week. The reason why we're not going to have any other business this week is because Ryan has got a cracker, and I want all three of us to be part of it. So, yeah, we're going to save it for next week. So there's no any other business. But Ryan, you're on baby watch still. So I'm guessing potentially you could be same time, same place next week.
Yeah, I hope to be same time, same place next week. Maybe with a new addition to the family. So let's see.
Wow. Okay, the countdown is on. The countdown is on. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, then we'll come back with the final section. And I'm sorry if you don't like this bit, by all means, but it's with Gerry Freeman. And I sat down, I broke it down into three sections. And this section is about Testament, Arm and Swartz and people like that. And if you're into your older stuff, it's funny, it's fascinating, and everything else. So I apologise. I'm a little bit self-indulgent with that stuff because I love that stuff anyway. But all three of us will be back to do our any other businesses next week. But sit back, relax. As I say, we've got Gerry Freeman coming up the last sector. It is, I promise you, it's the final section we did with Gerry. And then we finish off with Martin Wilkinson, CA1 Sport, of course, who we've just been talking about, who's Frederick Arland's team boss in the MSA Penistone British Rally Championship.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Yeah, Armin, better known sometimes as Kevin Schwantz, because he was mad as well. But, yeah, we've been on this road all day in Greece, coming downhill. It was quite a long straight into a 90, right? When you're co-driving, you can feel, if you've done it all the same bit, you can tell where you are just by the engine notes and what gear is in. And I was kind of concentrating on the tyres, and I was probably reading a few notes to him, and we came down this hill. And at the point at which he was supposed to change from fifth to fourth, or from fourth to third, he went up instead of down. And I looked up and I thought, heavens, or words to that effect. And we just kind of went straight off at this 90 right and across this field. And it bounced and bumped and eventually just came to a stop. And by the time I looked around, I think we were in Macedonia. Rather than Greece. We'd gone off that far. And he looked at me and he just said, there was no grip from the tyres. And what? You just changed up, your muppet. I mean, yeah, good luck. He was another one, actually, that I felt sometimes didn't quite fulfil his potential, because he was quick boy.
Yeah.
Quick boy.
There's a lot, I called them, and we've talked about this quite a lot on our programme, there's a lot of good, and it doesn't do them a disservice, but almost good solid number two drivers. You know, yeah. You kind of had your superstars and you had your guaranteed point scorers.
Yeah.
And kind of him and Bruno Thierry, yeah, the one I always kind of use as that benchmark and go, they were the bankers, really.
Yeah.
You know, they'd go out and they were going to be top six and they were going to get, you know, grind your results out and get your manufacturer's points and things.
Yeah,
like
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Armin was good. Armin, you know, was the first one that I ever knew who did everything with a computer. You know, it was quite, I mean, this is a long time ago, you know, it wasn't exactly steam driven, you know, but he used to have this laptop that nobody else had, you know, and he used to get to the end of each test Well, you would prefer them to stay in the car and put some... But he didn't. He used to get out, put all his information into his laptop and get back in. That was... He was very, very efficient.
Yeah.
You know, and very good at stuff like that. Just a bit excitable.
So kind of fast forwarding on, we've gone through the mid-90s, I think it's fair to say. That,
yeah, I'd say.
Where were you when McRae won his title? Where were you at that point in your life?
Oh, was that where was I?
Yeah.
I stood right next to it. Well, about 10 yards away.
So you were on the team for that particular...
Oh, heavens, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. That was such a good day.
Yeah.
That was such a good... That ranks among the best in my entire life in rallying.
Wow.
Oh, I was so pleased for him. I was so pleased for me, to be honest. I mean, you know, it was great. I was just pleased in general. But, you know... It was great.
Was there any, because it's well documented now, obviously, you know, what had gone on with Carlos leading up to it. Obviously, Colin had been told to behave himself by David Richards and had to take a penalty and stuff like that. And he went into GB or Network Q or RAC, whatever we want to call it these days. He went into that event, you know, needing a result. And obviously, it didn't quite go all to plan. And, you know, there's those images of him bending control arms back into place and things like that. When you're back in service and that's your boy and that's who you've been working with and that's your tyre and that's your tyre that could win a world championship, how are you feeling when you're getting reports over the radio of these are the lengths he's having to go through to just to stay in the rally, let alone get a result?
I always had absolute belief in Colin. I never used to panic too much because you always thought Colin could do anything. It's a strange thing, you know, Roger was like that. I always used to think Roger could do anything because he was my big brother, you know what I mean? But with Colin, I always thought Colin could do anything. Colin used to get up in the morning, you could tell if he was going to win or not. He just had that about him, that nobody was going to beat him that day, end of. You know, he just had that aura about him. I never particularly worried too much because if it was fixable... He could fix it. You know, great mechanic. And if it wasn't, then so be it. We'll do something else. We'll win next time. You know, there would be no point getting screwed. I mean, at the end of the day, the truth of my position is I'm a tyre engineer. What in heaven's name can I do about it? You know, when they win, it's them. It's the car. You know, the tyres are a factor, certainly. You know, but it's all them. You know, I just stand there and take the applause off his back, you know, that's it. But I always thought Colin could do anything. He always had a little bit of a Superman aura about him, you know. So,
Joe, we had Paul Nagel on the programme a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about Chris's win on Mexico. And, of course, again, it's so well-trodden, this ground, that Chris Meek, of course, was Colin's protégé.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Nagel said something which kind of really stuck with me, and it'll probably stick with me. I've done two pieces when I've had people on as guests. And one of them was Ari Vatanen, where he said, "I expressed my joy for life through the steering wheel," which was just one of those quotes where you go, wow. We could finish it there because that's one of those quotes. But Paul Nagel said something, and he said, a lot of people constantly ask that question of what's it like to sit alongside Chris. He said, "I can say this without doubt," and I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly in fairness, but on a Friday morning, when I sit alongside him in a rally car, I honestly feel we can go and win any rally.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you kind of, that, it's such an easy, and it almost feels lazy saying it, but what you've just been saying about Colin almost kind of crosses over a little bit, and I don't know whether, obviously there's influence there, Chris has got an engineering background, of course, with his old man and stuff like that, but that just kind of resonated with me from what he was saying to what you've just said there.
Yeah, but, you know, this is sportsmen. This is sportsmen all the world over. You know, you're going to find this weekend, there's a load of blokes going to play rugby league in the sixth team, at, you know, in Wigan St. Pat's this weekend, and they all think they can win. And if they don't think they can win, there's no point being there. You know, I've seen you. When you get in your car, you don't think anybody's going to beat you. And if, you know, that's the point. It's about being a sportsman. You know, I would always go and shake everybody's hand and always go and, you know, shake the hands of the boys from Michelin and wherever we were. But if we haven't won, I hated it. Absolutely hated it. There's no prizes for being first loser. And if you actually think like that, that, you know, I don't mind losing, what's the point of being there? What's the point? So these people are at the top of the game, especially the ones at the top of the game. They know they can win. They don't think they might be able to or possibly. They know they can win. You know, and they really, really believe it. That's what makes them special.
So 95 World Championship with Colin. Still around Pro Drive. We'll move on to Richard, who's sadly also no longer with us. You were also part of that party as well.
Yeah. I enjoyed the one of the biggest parties was when he wasn't with us at all. When he won in Safari. I think that was the year before when he was with Mitsubishi. And that was a great day because I was so pleased for him. It was like his step up.
Yeah.
You know, but Burnsy. Yeah.
The analogies that's always passed between Colin and Richard at Red Bull today. Oscar Solberg was getting interviewed in Motorsport News this week by my colleague Jack Benyon, and he's talking about, you know, how his heroes were actually Colin and Richard, but Richard was far more methodical and, you know, a lot more, you know, thought out and everything else, whereas Colin was, you know, did it by the seat of his pants. Is that a lazy comparison?
They were just entirely different personalities. I don't think... There's a certain amount of truth in that. You know, Richard probably was quieter and more thoughtful. And Colin was absolutely, definitely wild. But I think sometimes we get a little bit... We say things about Colin that are maybe a bit unfair, you know. Colin was a fantastic test driver. He could feel it. He knew it, you know. Like I said before, he was always at one with the car. You know, he almost inseparable from it. He was part of it. And he could feel it. And his feedback was fantastic. He always used good language, which from my point of view, sitting the other side of the car, is great. You know, he would use words that actually described perfectly what he was feeling. And it was very easy to translate. So sometimes you have to be a bit careful that you malign him and just call him a bit, you know, he was just wild, in fact, which he was. But he was very, very good, you know, at all aspects of it. Richard was, you know, a little bit more Carlos-like, very methodical, and wanted to go about it in a kind of very logical kind of way. But just different people. The comparison is that they were
just two Brits. That's the thing. You know, it's kind of one of those. Again, it always feels lazy when the fact that the pair of them are compared. But you know, there was a lot of other drivers around at the time. Right. You know, of course, we spoke about Tommy quite a bit. Tommy was the kind of the thorn in the side of the pair of them for many, many years. Really, yeah. You know, he was the one that was winning championships while, you know, they were. But, you know, all surrounds in the, you know, in the years that they weren't winning it. And obviously Richard had to leave Mitsubishi in order for him to take that step up. Because no one could live in Tommy's shadow, it seemed, in that second car at Mitsubishi. You know, they went through a fair few drivers that didn't quite get it working.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. You know, that Tommy was, I don't know, I'll ask you a question here, because this is definitely worthwhile. Who do you think is the best of the best? Because, you know, Tommy's World Championships, he had an awful lot. And compared to sort of our Brits, you know, more successful.
Obviously at the moment we've got Sebastian Loeb, who's 9 times world champion. Yeah, yeah. And I think Loeb was special. I think Loeb would have been special in any era. I believe he would have won as many titles if it would have been that period, that halcyon period, if you like, where we had Tommy, Richard, Colin, even I suppose Marcus at his POM as well. I don't think he would have done. I think some of his titles were, you know, there was only 2 factory teams at the time.
That's a big factor.
And good on both Ford and Citroën for supporting the championship. If one of them would have went, I really don't know where we'd be with the World Rally Championship.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
It is hard, isn't it?
It's very difficult. I think... I think for me, and this is where a lot of people were concerned about Tommy having the Toyota project originally, because Tommy was very, and this is my interpretation of it from a young fan and growing up and learning what I've learned over the years, but you know, he was still peddling that Group A car when everyone had gone to a world car specification. So his car was probably still a lot more mechanical, and he was driving it a lot more through the seat of his pants as opposed to using some of the electronics that some of the others were using. And I've got a respect for that, where ironically, when they did go to the world car, it probably was where it started to unravel a little bit, because he really did have the Group A car working. I think it's an incredibly close call, and I think the number of titles perhaps shouldn't dictate who the greatest is. And, you know, will we be having this conversation in 5 years' time where you have to bring Ogier into that?
Absolutely.
You have to bring Ogier in.
Absolutely.
And in many ways, you could say that Ogier is currently going through a spell now where there is a lot more protagonists, serious protagonists.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because,
you
know, back in, you know, when a lot of, I don't know what people are going to say listening to this, and I can imagine what they're saying to me now, where they're saying, well, you know, when Loeb first came in, McRae and Sainz, they all were still there, but it was on the wind down, it wasn't them in the plum. And you could argue that this happens all the time when drivers, you know, young and old, and there's a crossover period and there's a handing over the baton and things like that. I understand that, but I would have loved to have seen them all on a level playing field just for that one season, because I think it would have been an amazing spectacle. But in many ways, I think we had that amazing spectacle, albeit I can remember people getting bored with Tommy winning.
Tommy didn't
you know, and you know Tommy was the only man that I know who won a rally stood in front of a TV camera with a cold, you know. That's or won a championship rather. You know, it's things like that, and you know, I think that's what is very, very special about the sport. And you know, we could have 100 people sat around this table and not one of them would give the same answer.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
but I think, don't you think that maybe that's what makes it special, maybe what makes everything special, that the greatest argument that everybody has, especially after a couple of beers on a Friday night, you know, who's the best footballer, best rugby player, best rally driver? I'll tell you what I do know. When you watch famous footage, Ari Vatanen going over the grids in the Isle of Man with a puncture.
That's the start of our programme. There's a bit of that. We sample a bit of that.
Young Meek in Mexico. He'll always be Young Meek to me, I suppose. Yeah. But if you're stood by the side of the road, there's no difference. It is awesome and mind-blowing, the speed that they go. It is incredible how they hold on to the cars, you know, and they are to be admired with their skill and bravery.
You've been around other forms of motorsport. We touched on touring cars and stuff before as well, obviously, with, you know, your adventures with Pirelli and various other tire manufacturers. Your average man on the street who doesn't understand what rallying is and what it's all about and what we go through, perhaps don't really appreciate just how good the drivers are, I don't think. Whereas drivers from other disciplines always seem to me, and they may be just being polite when they're asked the question, I don't know, but what's your interpretation of how the best of the best rally-wise are actually interpreted in other forms of motorsport?
I don't think there's any dispute at all. Best drivers are rally drivers.
No.
No question. Because they can adapt. It's not always what they expect the next corner. It's... I think there's a lot to be said, the difference between racing and rallying, rallying on your own and racing side by side. I think that there are some fabulous talents, especially when you watch British Touring Car. But, yeah, I think the rally driver is a more complete driver. And I don't think you would get many disciplines would argue with that. I mean, what was the name of that show that used to be on TV? Superstars or something like that.
Yeah.
And the rally driver's always won. What was it called?
I know the one you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the rally driver always won. Always.
Yeah. I seem to remember Barry Lee doing it.
I remember the Superstars, the original one, when James Hunt did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less said, the better.
So, coming out of the Pirelli period as well, when did you leave Pirelli then? What period?
2001, I think.
So that was when, obviously, things were starting to change.
And things were starting to change. It was the first year, I think, that Solberg went, Petter went to, I can't remember, it's a long time ago. I've slept since then.
Yeah.
I would say Petter was at Subaru. Year of Petter at Subaru.
Okay.
I remember the first year of Loeb as well. Or second year of Loeb.
Yeah, because he was running across the third car because he was teammates with McRae and Sainz at Citroën.
Yeah.
So your decision to... Because I think this is the other thing as well, which people forget about. While it's a fantastic experience to travel with the circus, that is the World Rally Championship, I think logically, and I think your brain can only handle it for so far. I've got various friends and people who work in both WRC and F1, and you know, we all kind of say the same. I've travelled with WRC as well, and you kind of get to the point where you know you have to call time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I said to you a long time ago in this interview that the first 5 years were fantastic. First 5 years with Pirelli doing World Rally Championship were unbelievable. I mean, great milestones, like the first time I won a rally when I was the only tyre engineer there, which was New Zealand with Carlos, you know, and it was just unbelievable. And, you know, lucky enough to be getting on planes and off planes and sitting up the front sometimes and going great distances and seeing all sorts of places around the world. It was just a wonderful experience. The second 5 years was a great experience in terms of the engineering and applying yourself to doing it and really enjoying the work. And after that, to be honest, you know, I'd had enough. I was burnt out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there were years where I didn't actually have to pay any income tax because I wasn't in any country long enough. You know, and there's so much that you miss doing it. And to be honest, I just miss being in the same place for a length of time. So I'd had enough, you know.
Well, once you called time and you came home to where we are today in Wigan. You got to say it like that.
Yeah.
In Wigan. I know you started helping some young drivers. You worked with a couple of young drivers, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, I think.
Well, I thought that it was a sensible thing to do, you know, that people had helped me. I would help them. Just sort of impart what knowledge I could do. And you find, actually, after a couple of years out of it, that there's not much you can tell anybody, you know, because you get some great stories. You know, you get some great insight into what used to go on, but it's a seriously fast moving sport.
When did you stop competing yourself? At what period did you?
I think I was probably still competing 5 or 6 years ago. No, but actually, I might be longer than that. I promised my wife, actually, after Roger was killed, that I probably wouldn't do it anymore. Well, I didn't really keep my promise too much, but you know, I kind of stopped after that. I'd done enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't. It's not that you would go still, but I'd done enough, and it was somebody else's turn to go and do this. You know, I moved on to try to run my own business and to, you know, I work with Silverstone Tyres, which are a great company, you know, and had loads of fun doing that. And now I moved on to MRF, and that's the buzz that I get now, trying to establish a brand and work with a brand and make the tyres good, you know. I think, you know, you hear sportsmen say, not that I'm a sportsman for heaven's sake, but you hear sportsmen say when they retire that, you know, it's probably best just to walk away from it. And I'm lucky because I've not walked away from it completely, but I think there was a point at which just stop, you know, because at the end of the day, when I used to sit with the bet, how in heaven's name
did you go back? Well, that's
how in heaven's name are you ever going to?
You preempted the question where I was going to go next. Yeah,
I used to sit next to Colin McRae, and the vast majority of people would turn around and go, "Wow,
yeah,
are we ever going to better that?" And not only that, he was my friend, you know. And I used to go and do silly things with him and drink beer and act daft, and you know, how are you ever going to better that? And when you take that to the next step, you say, and with his brother, and with the vast majority of, you know, famous drivers of the, you know, the end of the last century. That sounds a long time ago. But are you ever going to get any better than that? You know, and now if I do it, I would, you know, if my sons were interested, I would do it with them, but they're not particularly. So I just enjoy this side of it now. So I don't regret leaving it. I miss some of the places I used to go to, but don't regret stopping at all.
Which is why you keep on trying to get me to go to Belgium.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, just to come up to speed, it's a bit of product placement. Obviously, I've mentioned them over the last couple of weeks, and Martin Holmes and I were talking about you and talking about the product. The MRF tyre, which is, you know, again, we've got massive coverage over in Australia and New Zealand. You know, we've got listeners over there, and we're also working with a couple of magazines over there as well. Peter Whitten at Rally Sport Magazine, we talked about MRF. You're now charged with the task of not only developing the tyre, but also bringing it to Europe.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How does that even begin to start happening?
Well, it's quite an adventure. I'll give you that. MRF, the first thing that you have to consider is that we coined a phrase last year at the Autosport Show that MRF is the biggest tyre company you've never heard of. It depends exactly which set of results you look at, but I think, you know, MRF are 12th, 13th, something like that, biggest tyre company in the world. They're huge. They have a very long and distinguished pedigree in all kinds of motorsport, but especially in India and in Asia. Asian Pacific Championship, for example, they've won on many, many occasions. But if you are going to be a really successful company these days, you've got to go to the rest of the world, haven't you? Not just India and the subcontinent. So that's what they want to do. So it's up to us to establish the brand in Europe. We had a very, very good starting point because the gravel tyres are exceptional. So we didn't really have much to do with that. We had to sort of get a few more sizes because different in India and Asia. But we've developed those now. And the important thing then is to be seen. So we've set up what I would consider to be quality dealers. The right people. I'm not really huge into just setting people up for the sake of, or because they have this kind of reputation or that. What I want to do is I want to set people up in countries to sell these tyres who other people will at least respect, or better still, like. And keep it like we said before, you know, about families, family motorsport. I'm quite into that, really. You know, I want to use people who are well-known and nice about things. I know it sounds a bit sad, that, really, doesn't it? But if you get good people who are respected and known, I'm sure that the brand will build better. And that's what we have to do. We have to build the brand throughout Europe. And we're now, this year, doing a lot more racing. Certainly like Civic Cup racing with the track day tyre and Legend racing. And we intend to obviously expand further with that. Hopefully, well, I know, but there's a few more championships that are happening in Europe later this year. We win rallies now. We won a couple of rallies last weekend, you know. And the guys in Scandinavia are doing really, really well. So that's entirely what we're trying to do. My focus is to actually get it so that when we go to Autosport next year, we don't have to say MRF is the biggest tyre company you've never heard of, but MRF is a really good, well-known, competitive player in the motorsport market.
Well, there you go. That's a really good way of wrapping up this one. Jerry, thanks so much, mate.
No problem at all.
And it is, as Ryan warned me, as after we did the stuff with Chris Baerbeck, that it is always weird talking to your mate, but it wasn't too weird, was it?
No, but you were a little bit weird.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. Well, we've got a friend of the show, I suppose. Yeah, I think Martin's a friend, isn't it? Martin Wilkinson, CA1 Sport. Thanks for coming back on Absolute Rally.
No problem, Tony. Nice to be back again.
It's good to have you on. I know Jack's got loads of stuff he wants to ask you about. Ryan's got stuff that he's texting, which we're not going to bother asking you about because you're not really interested in what Ryan Champion's got to say. I think it's fair to say.
He's probably just being nosy anyway.
He is just being nosy. You know exactly what he's like. A cracking weekend on the Pirelli, and my co-presenter, Jack Bennion, is chomping at the bit to talk to you about it.
Absolutely. Hello, yeah, Martin.
By the way, then. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. I guess the first place to start is sort of how the event went for you in terms of the Pirelli International Rally, which was the second round of the BRC last weekend. Tell our listeners a little bit about who you had there and how they sort of got on over the course of the event.
Yeah, well, it's obviously our home rally, the Pirelli Rally. We won it last year, so we were quite keen to run it last year with Frederick Allen. We were obviously quite keen to do the same again, so it's difficult to talk about just the weekend without mentioning the test because there's so much preparation goes into each event that we do. So we had all four drivers. We had Frederick, David Bogey, Jamie Anderson, and then our superstar returning to the championship was Tom Preston. And so we did our test on the Wednesday beforehand up in Kielder in a forest which was very representative to the event itself. It's actually the same test that we used last year, and all the boys were very happy going and very confident going into the event. So we were happy with the way our DMAC tyres performed this year. So we were fairly confident. I must admit, David more than anybody was extremely confident going into the weekend. As you know, David broke a brake pipe. David broke a brake pipe. It was just a bit fluke, really. The storm must have gone through the smallest of gaps and hit the brake pipe and squashed it against a bit of metal work, and he got a leak. So he did the whole of the first day without brakes, really, or certainly without rear brakes. So that was a bit disappointing for him.
In terms of that switch to DMAT you mentioned there, Martin, how much has that played into how your sort of season has started? Because you did Pirelli tyres last year, didn't you? So you switched to DMAT this year. How's that change sort of affected the drivers and how has it affected you as a team?
To be honest with you, it's really good actually, because obviously DMAT's a local firm to us anyway. So the communication probably from our team to DMAT it's probably easier than any other tyre manufacturer I could think of, because we're just up the road and, you know, we don't really even need to speak on the phone. We can just pop into the office and talk about things. So from that sense, communication is definitely a lot easier. It's obvious that the product's working. As a DMAC stroke CA1 Sport team this year, we've entered five events and won five events, three of them with David and two with Frederick. So it's obviously working. The tyre package is working and the cars are working on the package, and we've got two different cars. We've got Fiesta and Skoda on the tyres, and they're both working well.
Absolutely. And then you mentioned previously there just a little bit about David and the kind of the difficulty he had over his weekend, and it's a thing that I find fascinating with people who run teams is how they keep their drivers on track and how they sort of encourage them and how they make sure that their heads don't go down. How do you approach that as a team boss? And I know you've got Frederick, who quite often needs a bit of encouragement and a bit of sometimes calming down. He's always the first to say, isn't he, at the end of an event, that you've had to give him a slap across the head or try and sort of calm him down a little bit. So how do you approach dealing with drivers like that, and how do you get the best out of them?
Well, I think it's just experience, and a lot of you guys that know me will know it's just a spade, and if I think somebody's crying unnecessarily, I'll tell them. Because and likewise, if there's reason for them to be to drop their head, we'll try and work around it. But I think for anybody that's running a team with drivers, that rightly so as well, the drivers are very passionate, because the only thing they want to do is win rallies and be fastest on every single stage. They're not even happy if they lose one stage, especially people like Frederick and David. So I think if their heads drop, you have to kind of just coax them back round again and put reality there, let them understand that they are actually still leading the rally or still going to be fastest or whatever. And for David, when he lost an awful lot of time on the first day, I think he would, if the truth be known, he might have just said, oh, there's no point in carrying on. But from my point of view, I thought it was very important for him to carry on because there were still points to get for the championship, which he might really rely on later on in the season. But more than anything, it was just to keep his chin up and prove to everybody that he can go out and set fastest times. Well, it was absolutely fantastic what he did on the Sunday when everybody else was fighting for overall positions. And David blew them all away. He was fastest on every single stage without any issues at all.
Do you find working with the likes of David and Frederick, are they egging each other on? I know it seems like an obvious question to ask, but you know, what is the inter-team kind of situation? Because both of them now, of course, both running the Skoda R5, so it is an apples for apples comparison, really, isn't it?
We're quite fortunate. We've managed to build up a really good team of drivers, co-drivers, and even the mechanics, and it's a really good atmosphere. I know it's easy for me to say from inside, but it genuinely is a good atmosphere and everybody enjoys the company. And you want to see some of the things that goes on the WhatsApp groups, and the drivers have got their own WhatsApp group between them, and the team has, and the drivers are all in that team one as well, you know. So it's very jovial and it's very really light-hearted and a good atmosphere when everybody's relaxed. But then obviously when they need to turn it on and they need to be serious, then we are serious. But I must say, David and Frederick especially work really well together in speaking to each other about how the cars are, how the tyres are, and what effects little changes make on the cars while we're doing that on test. So they do work well. There's no barriers in the team at all. You know, if I'm talking to David about something, I'm more than happy for Frederick to stand and listen to it, and likewise with the other drivers there. So it's working well, and hopefully we can try and make a good few improvements with Tom and Jamie as well, because obviously they want to be higher up the order than where they are at the moment.
Do you think what you've just described there, you know, we all know teams and things like that, and do you think what you've just described there is the difference between someone being run as a customer and someone being managed?
I think so. I mean, I've seen when I've worked in the bigger teams, they don't have to be enemies, you know. They can be friends and they can get on well together, and they can be a nice atmosphere. There's no reason for them not to be. They're both in the same sport that they both love, and it's nice that their families come and support them there, and we just try to create a bit of an atmosphere to make it enjoyable for them. You could do that in a big team as well as a small team. Obviously, when you're in a big team and you're being paid to be there, then the added pressure's there. I think that bubbles through to the top sometimes.
Martin, just on coming to the BRC now, I mean, you've had a great start to the year, and Frederick's obviously won both the events to start the year, and you'll be leading the team points as well. But how do you feel the BRC is kind of playing out, ready for this year, and is there anything that they can be doing to improve, do you think, or where's the championship at in its current state?
I mean, the championship shift, really, I think everybody that's anything to do with the British Championship now needs to take a bow, because they've turned it round. And I mean, it's obviously without the good competitors in the close competition, you don't have a championship. But all the events now are really trying hard to make it work. And the championship organisers in Ian Campbell and Ben Taylor, they're doing a superb job in keeping the championship where it should be and improving it event on event. I couldn't advise them to do anything better, really. We have to walk before we can run, and I think they're doing an amazing job at the moment.
You mentioned events just there, Martin, and the Pirelli was one that had a few problems last year, wasn't it? So how did you feel, you know, the event went last weekend, and was it a big improvement on last year, do you think?
I was genuinely one of the biggest critics last year, because obviously I feel a little bit attached to it with it being a local rally, and I want our local areas. I haven't put a rally on that everybody in the country would be proud of, or anybody in the world would be proud to come and do. And I made a point of speaking to Brian Kinghorn, who was obviously one of the driving forces behind the event, this year when we were at the finish in Brampton, and congratulated him, because I think they've absolutely turned it around. It's gone from the bottom of the pile to the top of the pile. It was an absolutely first-class event this year.
Fantastic. Listen, I want to just get your thoughts on, there's a little team just up the road from you, I think you might have heard of them, called M Sport, who had a, I'd say it was not a bad weekend for them either.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, I can imagine how they felt with Elfin just missing out so closely But credit where it's due, to finish second on that event, regardless of whether they missed out on the win or not, is an amazing achievement. And it just shows again that in this area we've got fantastic people and fantastic facilities here, and for M Sport to be up at the front of the championship like that's just amazing.
Brilliant. Where do you see Elvin pushing on now? Obviously, you were up against him, of course, in the BRC last year with your drivers. Obviously, Elvin took a step back almost to take that step forward. He clearly has taken that step forward. Do you think he can push on from here?
I think he can. I think if you look at the statistics, Elvin's had more faster stage times than Otanik did last year when he was driving D-Max. So at this point in the season, Elvin's already further up the road than where he was. I think when they go to Finland and Poland and these places that suit the tyre and suit the commitment of Elfin, I'm quite sure that the win's going to come, isn't it? It's not far away. I mean, they had the win was there for them that time, and it just, by circumstances, didn't happen. It's very, very close to happening, so I think you can only go from strength to strength now.
Fantastic. So when's the next event for you guys? I think you're doing is it Scottish Championship now before you guys, before you're back out on BRC?
Yeah, we have. We've got quite a few bits and pieces going on. I'm trying to look at doing some more testing. We've obviously got the Scottish Rally not far round the corner, and the next round of the Scottish Championship as well, which I think we might have two cars at as well. So we'll, it's just a busy time. You know, we've got four cars which have, to be fair, have suffered a fair bit of wear and tear on that event, as you can imagine. It was a very hard event on the cars because it was such a dry event on the Pirelli Rally. So there's quite a lot of damage there to get sorted. So the boys are hard at it now already, getting the cars cleaned and back into the workshop ready for the assault on them.
Fantastic. Listen, we'll let you go and get your hands dirty, Martin. Really appreciate your time coming on, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, guys. Thank you. We'll speak to you soon.
No worries. All the best. Folks, you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter. You can go onto our website, absoluterally.co.uk, and send in your questions, anything you want from there. Do appreciate the download. We'll be back same time, same place in your podcast hole next week.